This week on the Ocean Cruises podcast, we are speaking with Lauren and Kirk from the YouTube sailing channel Sailing Solianis. Lauren and Kirk started their liveaboard life 5 years ago when they began to hunt for their first cruising boat. They picked a Tartan 37, one of the most respected American-made blue water cruisers. Their journey started in Racine, Milwaukee before navigating the Great Lakes and the inland waterway systems to Papa in the Gulf of Mexico. They have spent seasons cruising the Bahamas and meticulously caring for their boat, Solianis, and are now about to go boat hunting to start their next adventure. If you want to follow their journey, check out their YouTube channel, Sailing Solianis. You can support the podcast on Patreon and follow us on Instagram, Facebook, watch the interviews on YouTube, and download the audio on Apple Podcasts and Spotify.
I'll start off asking you, because I'm a parent, how is the transition to be full, mature adults gone with parenthood?
Good. Yeah, I think, like, I was actually looking at our daughter yesterday, like, thinking, you know, have we been missing something by not having a child for, like, the last 5 or 6 or 7 years, you know? Like, and then at the same time, it's like, well, that you would have had a completely different child, you know? So you like, I want that time with my daughter, you know? Like, I almost sort of am, like, missing the time that I didn't have if I had had her sooner.
Had her younger, yeah.
But she wouldn't have been the same person. And, it, you know, like, you can't change that. Like, I love my daughter, and I wouldn't have wanted her to be a different person, and it would have been a totally different experience.
Yeah, yeah.
It's there's a lot of weird things wrapped up in that thought process, right?
Yeah, it's like simultaneously you wish you could have had her. Like, when I go and pick her up, I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, like, how long am I going to be able to pick you up? Like, I feel old. Feel really old. So I wish, you know, we could have had her like 8 years ago, but then there's so much, we wouldn't have gone cruising. We wouldn't have done this. There wouldn't have been a Sailing Solianis, most likely. So things would have been way different.
Yeah.
It just gives you a completely different perspective on life and like a different perspective on every type of decision that you make and why you make that type of decision. You know, the important thing is, it's like, if you did have the kid 3 or 4 years earlier, it's like, oh, you could have cuddled something super cute, like, for 3 or 4 years longer. but you wouldn't be the same person, which then made you the same parents, which is probably better parents, because the more grown up you are, the better parent you're likely to be.
We hope so.
Yeah.
It's better than, like, reversing, I suppose. Yeah. So how was it with, because I think on YouTube you put, like, this is the first cruising season with the baby. Like, how did that go in general? Did you just find ways to deal with having a baby on board, and did it work out really well?
It worked out.
Yeah. I mean, I think it worked out.
Yeah, it worked out. I mean, we dialed everything way back.
Like, I think it actually... It made us actual cruisers. Like, it made us, we decided we weren't going to be, you know, bashing up wind. We were going to go where the wind takes us, and we were going to go when the weather was good. We were going to not push things the way that we kind of did before. Like, we were sort of timeline driven.
We had no plan this time.
And a lot of that was because of, you know, work obligations and other things, like, outside of the cruising life. And yeah, you know, the year that we spent on the boat with Renata, or the season, was purely just cruising. It was purely about being with our daughter on our boat wherever we were. And I think that, like, fundamentally changed my mindset for the better, which is really cool. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like, the long history of how we ended up doing what we're doing is that, you know, basically I gave Lauren a book about somebody who sailed around the Caribbean, and she fell in love with the idea of traveling on a boat and decided she really wanted to do this before we had kids. So it was just the two of us. And the irony of it all, I think, is that until we actually had a child, we were sort of like pushing our way through it, you know, and instead of in taking it for what it was and enjoying cruising life the way that it was supposed to be. Yep.
We worked on our boat too much too.
Yeah, you kept not thinking about it.
Yeah, we worked on it like it was our forever boat, which was probably silly, but we learned a ton.
We learned a ton.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we were trying to do we were just trying to do that with a bunch of other stuff, like starting a YouTube channel, still working freelance, and, you know, actually learning about boats. Like, we knew nothing about sailboats and navigation and, you know, the whole laundry list. So yeah. it was a lot.
I think it changes your perspective on things as well, like just with regards to being on a boat. Like, the way I sail or the way I play around on my boat when I'm on my own or with a friend is like totally different from the way I handle that thing when I've got like my wife and my kid on board. It's literally just about, I mean, my wife gets seasick as well. And, you know, the kid just starts flying around everywhere. So it's like sailing just becomes, how comfortable can I make this journey? And that is literally the only thing I'm thinking about right now.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Actually, Kirk talks about that in the episode that we just posted, about how important it is to make it comfortable, because it is inherently uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And you need to be at 100% all the time, because it can be dangerous if you're not. So got to make it comfortable so that you can keep your wits about you and, you know, stay safe.
Yeah. How much has the year been with being parents on a boat influenced some of the decisions you want to make to get the next boat with? Like, is that played a large factor in it, or was it something that you think you may have done anyway?
I mean, like the boats that we're looking at, or like what our next plans would be?
Well, yeah, just to change boats in general. Like to upgrade, go bigger, go wider, you know. Did like you being a parent on this boat, was that what kicked you to say, okay, we need to like change the vessel up a little bit now?
Even before the idea of having a kid, we wanted to go multi-hull.
Okay.
But that was like the first leap. But now the boat that we're considering has probably, it might have changed a little bit.
Yeah. There's a few things to think about, like, you know, cockpit design. Like the traditional mm-hmm. move, I feel like, for families on a monohull is, you know, move to like a center cockpit, right? Or have something where there's sort of like this safety bucket in the center of the boat, if you will, you know, and it's, you know, it gives you better visibility. It probably has a nicer layout below to like let the parents get away from the kids a little bit more, you know. There's some other advantages. So there's things like that I think we've considered, but like our primary motivation for kind of what our next boat is going to be is, it's not so much about the boat, but kind of the style of sailing that we're going to do for a few years. And that was influenced by having a child and was sort of planned. So, you know, to kind of speak high level about, you know, what our long-term plans have always been, it was do this sort of, I mean, like you talked about, like a test sail, a prolonged test sail, if you will, on a boat, just the two of us before we had kids. And then probably change the style of sailing that we're going to do for a little while we have kids. So family has always been very, very important to us. And we wanted to be a little bit more local when our kids are young, to have time with, you know, to spend with their grandparents. So I think we're looking at probably doing, you know, more local sailing mixed with sort of shorter term, what I've been calling just like voyages, which like in my mind, that means, you know, like a couple of weeks at a time, or like kind of taking specific trips rather than like prolonged, you know, live aboard type or cruising type sailing for a couple of years. While we also work on some financial, you know, things that we want to get in place before we take off on a, hopefully what would be at that point, a third boat. For, you know, a much longer sail with kids, much further destinations.
Kids are expensive. You need bigger boats. You need to work more hours. You know, everything racks up. Yeah, exactly. And it's just like, well, it's a major thing to factor as well. I mean, two people cruising, you can live on a relatively small budget. You don't need that much money for food or excursions or anything. But like, when you got a kid and you need to get new clothes every 6 months, and you need to start thinking about like homeschooling and you know, do they like PlayStation? That's you know, another cost now. One thing after another in a way. So just with regards to like the plan, I'll go back to like the beginning a little bit, but just like the plan moving forward, are you thinking of like continuing to do like YouTube videos and stuff like that about the journeys or the voyages you'll make?
That's the plan.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And actually, you know, one of the things that I think was kind of difficult for us was balancing our working obligations with our sailing obligations, with our filmmaking obligations for YouTube. And I think it was a lot to tackle. And we've obviously, you know, like our videos have always been behind. It's a thing that like people have always complained about. I think it's somewhat warranted, you know, like everyone wants to feel like they're a part of the journey that's happening now. But I think, you know, that's the way that video production works, is it takes a long time. A watch is going to have some sort of delay in it. But when we think about kind of what we want to do next, we want to be able to enjoy, you know, sailing while we're sailing. We want to be in the moment. We want to do that. And then come back and make the video.
Yeah, after, maybe. Right? Like, yeah. Like,
we want to take a little trip, focus on, you know, being there, enjoying it, film it, come back and edit it and put it together. So like, I think our style of video is going to change a little bit. We've kind of played around with, you know, or toyed around in our heads with, you know, how we might change our production style. And
yeah, we've been trying to talk ourselves into lowering our quality.
Not necessarily.
That's kind of what you guys are known for. So that's not the right idea.
So what we've talked about is still producing one or two like highly produced videos a month.
Two.
But then, all right. Right now we're not doing two.
Yeah, it's hard.
Filtering in, you know, some more kind of real time and like, you know, less.
Less stylized
yeah, content.
Totally produced stuff.
I think one of the issues, I mean, now we're like totally getting down
a rabbit hole
here, but one of the issues that I've always kind of had with our interaction on YouTube is it's felt like a very one-sided conversation.
Yeah.
Where we put out content and then, you know, people comment on it, but because we are so far behind, we don't get to have like this cool dialogue, this back and forth about, you know, like having people who have so graciously given us so many ideas.
We rarely get to use people's suggestions, which sucks. Yeah. Like that would be
super helpful part of doing it as well.
Yeah. And we would love to have that. And so we want to be more current. Like a lot of people are like, oh, we see that you have a delay in your video. Do you do that so no one can know where you are? Like, no.
Like a week would suffice, you know.
Yeah, fine. Oh yeah, no, it's we wish we could be more current, and we will actually quite soon, because we're running out of footage.
Right, okay, so yeah, it's necessary. Yeah.
It is. Yeah. We'll be leaping very soon.
We took a bit of a hiatus, you know, when our daughter was a newborn,
and then after our first season with her, so like the last half a year or more, we haven't filmed very much because we haven't been on the boat very much. So we'll be jumping soon.
Yeah,
we've told our patrons that so many times, and like we really believed it. We're like, yeah, we're really gonna get caught up. And then I hit a batch of footage that was really dense. You know, like when we got to the Bahamas, we were only in the Bahamas for 2 months, but I don't know. I don't even remember how long it took me to get our Bahamas videos out. It was probably like 4 or 5 months because we just had so much footage to work through. And I knew that after we left the Bahamas, we'd have much less. So I wanted to use everything that we had, you know, that was all the good stuff. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's,
that was the pinnacle of the dream. It was,
at least right now.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, this time we really need it. We want to get caught up. Yeah.
You guys both were quite experienced in making movies and this style of work, I take it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
we both went to school for video production. Mm-hmm. So it's not like we, you know, had no background in this and picked up a camera and figured it all out. But that being said, I mean, we're not the most technically proficient filmmakers either. We've never had the best equipment. We've never had the money to invest in the best equipment. We bought fake microphones on accident.
Oh my gosh. We couldn't believe it. We thought we were getting Rode brand microphones, and come to find out a year and a half later, Kirk was going through threads.
Yeah.
Counterfeit. Yeah. The whole time Kirk was like, why is our audio so horrible? And he would spend hours trying to fix it. And that was another reason why we were so far behind.
Oh, it's
ridiculous.
But that was on Amazon.
Yeah.
So it sent me down a rabbit hole trying to figure out why. Like, audio has always been tough for me. Like, you know, there's people that go to school specifically for audio, and audio is like one component. You know,
and we just thought we just suck at audio, and then we're like, why is everyone else's audio sound so good?
People raving about these microphones.
Yeah,
and it turns out we got it. And there's a whole like thread on a whole bunch of video production forums of people that bought these counterfeit Rode video mics, and we got two of them in a row. So we had bad audio for a long time.
I can't believe that was on Amazon. Man, you should sue. Yeah. I swear, get a class action type of situation going on against Jeff Bezos. Let's take him out with these microphones. Like, I think this could be the key.
that's the linchpin.
Right. Okay. So just talking about the boat that you have just sold. Tartan 37. That was just a gorgeous boat. It's just so, and you made it even prettier as well, which you wouldn't have thought possible because you put so much effort into it. But can you just talk about like the journey of this boat, like how you bought it, where you got it, and then like the type of sailing that you did on it?
Sure. Do you
want to take it? No, I have to think about it for a minute.
we didn't know what type of boat we wanted. We didn't narrow it down to a small subset of models very quickly. We were all over the place in the beginning, and then eventually we kind of narrowed it down into, we didn't want like a really super modern racy boat with a fin keel and a spade rudder. We wanted something that was a little bit, you know, more stable and in rougher weather. We knew we'd be sailing, you know, the Gulf, and the Great Lakes themselves are actually quite rough. They're very similar to the Gulf waves, where you're in shallow water, they're steep chop, you know, they're close together, short period. So we wanted a little bit of a heavier boat. We wanted something that was fiberglass, ideally something that wasn't cored, although the decks of the tartan clearly are cored. We had some deck rot, but that's what I was trying to avoid as much as possible. And like, we didn't have any sort of specifics around, you know, centerboard or shallow draft or keel steps mast or any of these other, you know,
kind of interesting, because we really didn't spend a lot of time looking at monohulls. We spent a ton of time looking at catamarans during the first year that we were searching. And so when we realized, we're like, okay, we don't have enough money to get the catamaran that we really need. It's just not going to happen. We went to monohulls, and then we started like figuring out like, oh yeah, there's these thing called blue water cruisers, you know, and like there's a kind of a subset of boats that we probably should be looking for. We didn't even want a shoal draft. Right.
It wasn't in the criteria.
Yeah. And we just ended up with it, I think. And once we saw the boat and we were like, oh, draft of four and
two.
That actually will be really good for the rivers in the Bahamas. So a lot of things kind of just fell together for us with this boat that we found.
And actually in the only experience that I previously had with tartans was, the Tartan 10, which is around a 30-foot model that is a pretty racy boat. A racing series here in the Great Lakes. So I did a weekend race on a Tartan 10, and that was kind of my experience on tartans. That's what I thought they were, was that's what they catered to. And it wasn't until we actually spotted this boat that I started to really research tartans and, you know, all of kind of the history behind them and how solidly built they were and how beautiful they were. I mean, that, you know, as a cruising boat, they're a pretty fantastic boat. We found the boat actually like a week after we were under contract with a previous boat.
It was
a Morgan
38. Yeah.
And that kind of fell apart. And that night we were devastated when we found out that, you know, we weren't going to be able to make this boat work. I went online, and the tartan that we ultimately purchased was like the very first boat that I saw. And I made a call the very next morning. I think we saw it like 24 hours later, and maybe 36 hours after that, like we were under contract. It was just like, boom, 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 like karma. Yeah. Somebody want, you know, whatever.
I remember Kirk showing me the listing. He's like, there's this tartan 37. I was like, what's a tartan? Like, I didn't even know. He's like, oh, I remember I raced on a tartan, like a racing boat. He's like, no, it's a cruising boat. So yeah, we really hardly knew anything about it, and it looked good in the pictures. And that was one thing that we were really looking for, was a well taken care of boat, because we were trying to get into something that we could take off in right away. Yeah. We didn't want to hang around trying to fix up something. And we had actually, the Morgan that we were under contract to buy was going to require a ton of work. The boat was in beautiful condition, but it just wasn't finished. Like, all the systems needed to be put in, a bunch of woodworking needed to be done. And yeah, so
we didn't really know what we were getting.
No, we didn't know what we were getting. So that falling through worked out better for us. Yeah. And then, man, when we saw the tartan in person, it looked even better than the photos. And we were just like, we were smitten.
Yeah, I was going to say, we were pretty smitten.
Mm-hmm. Like, is this the boat? Yeah.
It's one of those, it's timeless. Like, you know, in 50 years, people will look at that boat and they'll have exactly the same emotion from the way you guys looked at it. You know, it's not like a 1960s Beetle, you know, where it's like, right. Okay, let's take a newer version now, please. I'm sure I just offended a lot of people by saying that.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, I'm not into, like, you know, fat little German cars. So, yeah, it's just, yeah, it was just a stunning boat. I think, like, you did super well by that other deal falling out, because, like, I the guy who bought my boat, I was having a conversation with him because I needed to change a couple of bits and he wanted to take it off me. I was like, no, let me fix them, because it's like your first cruising boat and you need to have this ready to go, because the feeling of, like, getting a boat and it's like, oh god, now I need to fix it, like, I would hate that. So yeah, it's good that you got one that just worked straight away.
Yeah.
And I mean, we still spent a ton of time working on it, right? Like, that's the other thing, is
it wasn't cruising ready. Yeah. It was weekend sailing ready. Yeah, so it needed a lot of stuff. Yeah. But I mean, it was in good condition.
Yeah. The boat was well taken care of, but that's, you know, that's again, back to kind of a lot of these things that we learned about, which is, how do you plan to use the boat? Right. Cause like, a boat can be in a good condition, but if it doesn't have the things that you still need on it, for how you plan to use it, you're still going to be in for a lot of work.
Which is actually how we then sort of designed our sail plan, I suppose you should, our schedule, our goals. So we were like, okay, we have a terrible battery bank. We need to install, you know, a robust battery bank. We need solar panels. We need to upgrade this, that, and the other thing. And so we tried to plan, like, okay, this is what we need to get down the river. This is what we need to get, you know, from the river through the Gulf and then to Florida. And like, what are we going to need to go to the Bahamas? And we tried to do all of those things, taking on big projects, maybe one or two at a time each season, so that, you know, we weren't completely overwhelmed, but we still had what we needed in each season.
So. I think it's like, it was a very good boat, and generally a very good boat size and age, to like learn all those practical skills on as well. Because you did a lot. You did a bit of everything. You did like upholstery, you did interior work, you know, you did rigging on it, electrical, like, and it's great to learn on a boat where if something just goes terribly wrong, okay, it's not like a, you know, $400,000 floating home. It's like something that, okay, we can make a change here, or we can fix something there. So yeah, it's great to have like that first type of boat for that, so you can learn kind of from your mistakes in a way as well.
Yeah. We didn't feel that way.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
I did.
We felt like we took ownership of this thing, that this beautiful object that had been around since before either of us, and that we were now its caretakers, and we had to like look out for it. Right. And if we messed it up, like, the sea gods, I don't know who they are, but they'd come looking for us.
You drilled a hole in the teak where you shouldn't have, you know, like, we really tried to, you know, do as little as possible and try to preserve what was there. Like, we didn't go, you know, with a hacksaw through the thing.
We didn't do, you know, like Uma, Uma completely redesigned it. They're both architectural students, right?
But their boat was $3,000, right? I think.
Yeah. But they completely changed the interior layout.
Yeah.
Ripped, you know, things out all over the place.
The boat was asking for it. That. Our boat was not asking for it.
We added jewelry to an already good looking boat.
Yeah, I think that's useful. What made it so much better as well. It's like, you know, it was, I mean, it was great to start off with, and it's like you only added to that classical element, but made it really clean also, which is great. You know, I'm just like, the boats from that era, like 1960s, 70s, going into 80s kind of, and then more expensive boats since then. Like in 20, 30, 40 years time, I just don't think people are going to have that emotional attachment because they all look the same now. You know, I did a podcast with somebody else. Oh, it was John Kretschner, the passage making instructor. It's like really, really competent sailors, wrote books and stuff like that. And like in 30, 40 years, there isn't going to be like any tartan 37s. They're probably not going to be floating anymore. Or if there are, it's going to be very, very few of them because it would have cost so much money to like refit and refit and refit. And it's just going to be like little plastic fiberglass ex-charter things because the 40-foot boats now that are made for blue water cruising are super expensive.
Right. Yeah, it's an interesting design period because it's back far enough where sailing was still kind of like a yachty, hoity-toity. Like there was a lot of design considerations, and it's, you know, like now it's much more about like, you know, cost and budget and what is it like.
How many bathrooms can we fit in?
Yeah, like how can we make the most money out of a charter fleet, and how can we kind of cut costs in a production to like, you know, bring expenses down because they've gotten so expensive. But I think there's that era where they didn't really know how solid fiberglass really was, but there was still like really beautiful clean lines.
It was a craft still then, and now it's a production.
Yeah.
That's a really interesting choice of words. Actually, I think that reflects it quite well. That it was like craft and not production.
Yeah,
that makes a lot of sense. Right, just on in regards to like you know you're buying the boat and you spent like a number of years cruising on it and upgrading it. How did you manage like the finances with that? Did you like save up a chunk and then that was like boat and refit? Did you earn money from like freelance work as you were going and that's how you refit it? Like, how did all that plan and work out?
Both. Yeah.
It was a lot of stress, actually. We weren't, and we've never been someone who can like, you know, just pop into a town on a shoestring with a few dollars in our pocket and, you know, like go busking or whatever and, you know, figure out a way out. Like we can't live that close to the line.
We're just, whatever the line we feel is, like we're too old for that. Like we need to be more responsible. Like we can't just do now. Like, oh, we're gonna save up, you know, $50,000 and buy a boat and we're gonna bring whatever we have in our piggy bank and that's that, you know. Like we're gonna just go, I'm gonna sew and what, like a lot of people, you know, it's noble to do that.
It's
but
amazing.
We make just it work as well.
And you can, like, you know,
yeah,
I think you know, there's a lot of motivation or motivating factors when you're living that close to the edge, right? Like you're gonna figure out how to make it work because there's no other option.
Like I didn't want to do that because I had already done it for 10 years, you know, like I've already waited tables for 10 years, you know, so I didn't want to end up in a position where, you know, we have to stop cruising because we have to start making money again. So the whole goal and the reason why it took us so long to dive into cruising is because we were trying to set up our passive income streams and our remote working setup so that we could keep making money while we were cruising and we weren't going to sink
financially.
And we could just worry about, trying not to sink literally.
So we saved up a chunk of money, enough to have purchased the boat. We didn't purchase it in cash, but we could have. We took out a loan for other reasons, which we can get into or not. But
it was purely financial, actually.
We're planning to make a couple more videos about that aspect of it because a lot of people have asked us. But We had a bit of passive income. We have two rental properties. We had three at one point. We've sold one. But so that, you know, makes us like the tiniest bit of money, not enough to live on by any means, even on a boat floating for free at anchor somewhere.
We
couldn't live on that.
Yeah.
But, you know, in the future, like the hope is that that's kind of a retirement, you know, nest egg. Being creative people, we knew that we were never going to make enough money. Doing creative type work to like be able to actually have a solid retirement. So that was kind of always that plan. And then, yeah, we did freelance work. So I had a contract kind of with an old employer of mine that I worked for, I don't know, the first 3 or 3.5 years.
Yeah.
Lauren still did a bit of freelance work here and there. And, you know, we made videos and still did. You did some video contract work. Even with
I did video editing
and a few others.
And I was trying to run my real estate photography business that I had started in San Diego before we moved and bought our boat remotely. So I'd actually like hired a photographer and was just doing client management and editing, doing posts on the photos.
Nice.
So I did that for the first season that we were on the boat. And slowly, the more seasons we got into cruising, we started to shed that stuff and we made more videos and we grew our support online. So by the end, it was all YouTube.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really good.
And the passive rental, the real estate, we still have that. But otherwise, all of our freelance work was gone.
Yeah, that's really good. And it's like, I think as well, the way you approached it, because it's like, I think most people see adopting this type of lifestyle is like one of two options. You wait till you're retired and you got loads of money and you get a, you know, 50, 60, 70, whatever, or you just go for it when you're young and stupid. And it's like, I do think the best thing to do is the way you've done it. And it's kind of the way we're doing it as well. Although I think I might be a bit older. I've got a few more wrinkles than you guys. But just get to the point where you can do it in relative comfort. Like a level of comfort that you're used to, you know, if you live in like a 3-bedroom house or you've got a nice condo, just kind of hang out until you can get something that you're going to be comfortable in. Don't like really downgrade your lifestyle because then you'll just find it harder.
And it's already hard no matter what. Even if you're making, you know, this relatively parallel or horizontal move, like just living on a boat is tough, you know, like you're not carrying your water to your house every day. You're not carrying your garbage and your
basic
human
stuff.
Waste away every day. Yeah. You know, like, yeah, just the very basic.
Yeah.
Life is tough on a boat.
I think if we, if that was like the first thing we did after we graduated high school is like, yeah, we're going to buy a boat and go sail around the Caribbean or something. Totally could have seen doing it like that.
Yeah.
For sure. Going off with no money and just
winging it.
Winging it. Yeah. But we had already burned up our wing in it years.
Yeah.
So
we did that traveling around Australia.
We did. Yeah. So yeah.
Yeah.
We wanted I to have,
if you've got that out of your system as well, well, it depends. Like a lot of people, they, you know, they possibly don't really travel until they're in the mid twenties. I traveled like after high school. So I'd already, you know, been around Asia and, you know, slept in the most vile conditions, you know, to the point where I was like, okay, I don't want to do this for 10 years. Let's go figure something out. Save something, you know, and go and stay in like a hotel at least as, you know, private toilet.
Right.
So yeah, it just depends what you're used to.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So with regards to like the journey of the boat on the tartan, at what point did you decide, okay, we want to get a new boat? Was that like a couple of seasons in or after a first season? What were you thinking?
It was, well, we know a very specific moment.
What was it?
Hurricane,
right. No, Dorian.
Hurricane Dorian.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Dorian. Yeah.
So our boat was, in, St. Augustine.
Mm.
So we were watching the hurricane completely decimate the Bahamas. And like the previous years, so we had just the year prior sailed through, on the West Coast.
Pensacola,
Panama City Beach.
Yeah.
And so we had stayed a week there, and I don't even remember the name.
I believe
of that
it
person.
Was Matthew.
Matthew
went through there.
Completely wiped out a place that we had just been.
Mm-hmm.
We were now watching Dorian completely wipe out a place that we had just been a few
the
months.
The beautiful
before.
Abacos just—it crushed us. I couldn't believe it.
And the path at the time, despite I think
yeah. The National Weather Service saying it was going to go.
They're basically predicting a landfall like right in northern Florida.
Yeah.
Like, okay, our boat is about 2.5 feet above sea level.
Mm-hmm.
When we were there, even on like some of the larger tides, like the water was
there was
coming
water up
near
around
our
the jack stands.
Like the boat's not tied down with any hurricane anchors or anything. We're losing this boat. Like,
yeah.
It's gone.
We were convinced for about 24 hours that it was gone.
And the hurricane didn't go there. We were completely spared. It was not, it was,
there was high winds. There was like 50 mile an hour winds.
And there was some pretty high water.
Yeah.
But nothing happened.
It was fine.
But in that period, we kind of reverted back to the first boat that we had really gotten serious about was this, catamaran. It was called Nice Pair. It was a boat that actually used to be in the Great Lakes. It was a very stripped down, like racing catamaran, but it was trailerable. So we kind of went back to this idea of the way that we saw ourselves starting to sail and use our boat over, you know, the next 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 years as we have little kids was this concept of trying to sail in the Great Lakes during the summer and to sail in the
somewhere
Caribbean
else.
Or some other cruising destination, the East Coast, Maine. The Sea of Cortez, yeah. Wherever we wanted
Pacific
to,
Northwest.
During the winter months up here in the Great Lakes season and try to get the best of both worlds. And so we were asking ourselves, why are we spending all of this time working on a boat in boatyards? Why are we, you know...
Why are we paying to store it?
Paying to store it for hurricane season.
And then being emotionally crushed every time a hurricane comes to your head. I think we're going to lose it.
Yeah.
Oh.
So we kind of went back to that, you know, that model of this voyaging kind of sailing that I'm talking about. And, you know, to be able to sail up here, which we didn't really get to explore. We sailed for
three weeks.
Months. Well, we're here for 3 months.
We sailed
around Lake Michigan and just barely scratched the surface because there's so many cool cruising destinations up here. And having a boat that moved at 5 knots and couldn't go over the road and you know, all of that, it limited us to, you know, choosing. We could either continue to sail up here for 6 months or we could sail down in the Caribbean area for 6 months because we knew we wanted to have a child and that we weren't going to be crossing oceans with a toddler on board.
And we wanted to have these little ones close to grandparents was the biggest thing.
Yeah.
So
That's such an important thing as well. we live in Spain and my family is like in the UK. My wife's family is in Dubai and it's like, it is such a struggle. Do you know, when you don't have support around, like we haven't had a day off in 3 years. We haven't had one night off, not even a day off. We haven't had a babysitter. We take him to nursery sometimes. But, you know, sometimes he's really upset when he gets back and then you have help for an entire afternoon, you know. So it's like, yeah, like being around, you know, their grandparents, like it makes your life so much easier.
Yeah. Yeah. We, I think our daughter has formed an almost unhealthy relationship with my mother.
Right. Okay.
They have a very, very tight. Tight relationship. When she shows up, my Renata just like goes into another dimension.
Berserk. Yeah, she's like not her daughter anymore.
Right. Hey, if it means more date nights or pizza or a few drinks down at the bar, then just absorb it and enjoy it.
Yep.
We've been taking advantage.
Yeah. So, I mean, when it came to like making the decision to sell that boat and then move on to the next, you've had like a few thoughts and a few ideas. What about the old boat has molded a decision to purchase a specific type of boat for your next boat?
Handful of things. One being I get seasick.
Right.
So we really...
Two holes is better than one.
Yeah, we wanted to move to a multi-home. So that was a huge reason.
I was going to say another is just my physical size.
Yes.
So I'm 6'2", and there wasn't a place on the Tartan 37 that I could completely stretch my body out and not feel the edges of something. So the cockpit was too short to completely lay down in. The V-berth, if I stretched my toes out, you know, like I had to lay flat footed.
He had to lay like he was in a coffin, with feet up like this.
And then standing up, the same thing, the settees, like there was nowhere that I could just go like this and just be like a big, making like a snow angel or anything, and just feel like I was not sort of caged.
Yeah. But it doesn't actually mean that we're getting a boat that fixes that problem, but it's getting him out of the boat where it really was a problem, because on a multi-hull, you typically spend more time above the waterline than you do below. With a monohull, they call you a gopher or something. Yeah. What is it?
Multi-hullers call monohullers prairie dogs.
Prairie dogs. Yeah, because they're always hopping up through the hatch. Yeah.
I've not heard that before.
Usually down below.
Yeah. I mean, that was a boat that we were living full time on.
Yeah.
And for the next couple of years, we're not going to be living full time on the boat. So some of those requirements have changed, specifically for our next boat. But long term, we wanted a boat that we know that if and when we sail around the world, or when we cross the Pacific, or whatever our next big, sort of goal is going to be, that it's going to be on a multi-hull, and we want to spend some more time developing some of those sailing skills.
Yeah.
So like when you're sailing a monohull, there's a lot of different tactics you take in different sea states and wind conditions that you wouldn't take in a multi-hull, and vice versa.
Oh, yeah.
And being able to, spend a little bit of time practicing those things and getting comfortable with them and how a different type of boat handles in different types of weather. It was, another thing that we're interested in, kind of hashing out.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I've never actually skippered a catamaran, but I've been on plenty of them when they've been sailing. I've helped, but I've never actually skippered one. But I watched a video, I don't know, some point last year, because we were looking at catamarans for a little while, because my wife gets incredibly seasick. She had to go for like hypnotherapy to get rid of it.
Oh, and, did it work? Bizarre,
yeah, which was weird. Wow. Yeah, it really worked. So,
is it gone now?
Gone, yeah. And I'm very open-minded to a multitude of things, but when it came to hypnotherapy, I was like, that's fake. I was not buying it at all. I didn't say that to my wife. I was just being a very optimistic, supportive husband. But I was thinking, this is crap. But no, it completely worked. She was scared of the water. She was scared of walking around the boat, and she was vomiting everywhere. Like literally, as soon as we got a heel on, I was just waiting for a little head to pop up out of a hatch and just spew everywhere. And I think 4 or 5 sessions, a few $100. And she was walking around the deck. She's jumping in the water. I think after a couple of days, she wasn't throwing up. I was so surprised.
And when did that happen? And how long has she been seasick free?
She's been seasick free for a year. Yeah. Cause we did a bit more sailing at the end of last year in Greece, and she was absolutely fine for that.
Oh my gosh.
Well, it works.
I was gonna ask you for a recommendation.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm getting seasick. It's 50% mental for sure, and 50%, physical. I absolutely believe it. And because we've actually worked through a couple of my episodes, like Kirk was like distracting me, and I was like, I'm gonna get through this. And I was like screaming like at the top of my lungs just to try to, I don't know. I don't know what I was trying to do, but get around it. And it did help. It kept me from actually getting sick. But I still have that queasy feeling. So man, if there was any way I could actually get rid of it like that.
Well, anyway, so okay. the woman who The woman who helped my wife, we recommended her to a few people. We just recommended her to another couple of cruisers. Actually, you might like, they just started up a YouTube channel. They're called like Deep Blue Dirts. They do biking. It was actually like a sponsored stunt bike person. Don't know exactly. Anyways, they're good on a bike. And they do like half sailing, half like mountain biking. But it's really cool. Anyway, so... she froze up a little bit, Jenny, and we just recommended her. And I think she's going to do them over Zoom because they can't get to the office. So, yeah, if it works over Zoom, I'll let you know and I'll follow the details.
Oh, let me know. Yeah. I would maybe even consider flying over there.
Yeah, it's, do you know, like when we were in Greece, there was one of the girls who was there called Maddie, and they have a sailing channel called Rigging Doctor. Really, really cool old school sailing, British, brilliant. And she was sick all the time, like she was vomiting all the time. I mean, she just loves being on boats, so she was just battling through it. She's like, no, it's cool, I really love it. And I was like, amazing, like you really, really love sailing. But I was like, oh my gosh, like dealing with that, like just constantly wanting to throw up on a boat, I don't think I could do it.
Yeah, wow.
I don't get seasick at all. So yeah, I don't, it's, I struggle trying to understand what Lauren's going through because I can't put myself there. And I imagine how tough it has to be.
I was seasick once and it was because I woke up and for breakfast, I had like 2 coffees and about 6 cigarettes. I don't know why. I was obviously just feeling stupid, but that was my breakfast. And I did end up being sick. And that's the only occasion.
That's not surprising.
I don't know if you'd have to be on a boat for that to make you sick either.
I've got a pretty high tolerance to this type of stuff. So yeah, maybe it was the boat that tipped me over the edge. No, I think that I've only really been sick once. It was when I was going to the gym loads and somebody was like, I have egg whites. So I was like, okay, I'll have egg whites. And like, just don't do that, basically. I got really sick off it, and Hibber was like, yeah, I just feel like that, like all the time we're sailing at first, and now she's fine. So maybe it works. I'll let you know anyway if
okay,
magic works over Zoom. maybe that's what it is. Cool. All right, so just in regards to like the YouTube stuff, what's coming up, because you're doing like your first season on the boat still with the baby. How is that timeline wise in terms of you then selling the boat and then looking for the next one?
Yeah. So we actually we haven't announced that we sold our boat, really.
Not in YouTube. I mean, we did.
We've only, I think, told people personally in emails that we actually sold it.
I mean, it was on Facebook.
Like, that we were going to sell it. Yeah. And so I think people, you know, they might not know that we actually sold it or not.
The boat is sold.
The boat is sold. It is. Okay. Yeah, we sold it last fall.
So nobody needs to contact us anymore. Like even yesterday, I got an email like, hey, is the boat still for sale?
Yeah.
You really
want to
see it?
Yeah. I'm like, oh, sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we sold it. Oh, I wanted to tell you one more thing. You were asking about why or what informed us on our old boat as to what our new boat would be. The last big thing was maintenance. We didn't want to have to do so much maintenance. Like the tartan was beautiful, but teak, too much teak. And it didn't even have that much teak. But it's just incredible how much work it requires. Yeah. All of the stainless that was on it. I can't remember the other stuff.
Yeah, I think we started a list somewhere. We might have to reference that. But like there were a few like specifics that we did make a list when we were looking for our next boat. But yeah, maintenance was going to be one. Like having everything exposed. So our boat, I liken it to somebody wearing a tuxedo, right? Like when you wear a tux, like everything. You've got this nice jacket that covers up your shirt and your tie covers up your buttons on your shirt and your cuff. And you're like, everything is like, you know, covering it up to make everything look perfect. And I really like the style of boat, you know, like, why is it slipping my mind now? Chris White, Atlantic Cats, or like other boats that are like, very, very functionally designed, where all of your fasteners are exposed and easily accessible. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, a nice, clean, white interior. Like, we loved our wood. It was like,
it was beautiful. It was
like a little cocoon, dark yeah. cocoon that we could go into in the middle of the day to get out of. Like,
it's so impractical. Just
very yeah. impractical.
Yeah. So that was, I just wanted to mention that, like, that was another huge yeah. factor.
Yeah, minimizing stainless on the exterior, minimizing
teak
on the exterior, having everything exposed and easily accessible.
And otherwise simple mm-hmm. systems too, which is a whole nother conversation. But yeah, so that was a big
kind
thing.
Of like the boat manufacturers know what they're doing in a way. This is what they're all yeah. doing now.
Yeah, yeah.
So just meeting the demands. It's just that yeah. trade-off, yeah. isn't it? It's like, it's, you know, when you have a boat like that, it's just like having an incredibly well, you know, maintained, perfectly kept antique in your living room that you just want to stare at all the time. Yeah. But yeah, pain to maintain. Teak is just like, yeah, with our next boat, I just want to avoid that as much as possible. Like, the cost of teak now is insane.
Yeah.
Like, to
yeah.
get, like, the boat that we're looking at, I was on a group and I was asking a few people, like, you know, it's gonna need to be replaced eventually. And I was like, what's the cost? And people are like, $40,000-$50,000. I'm like, mate, that's like a Tesla. There's no way I'm spending that on yeah. piece of wood. No chance.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, there's a cheaper alternative that you can get in Europe. I don't know if you can get it in the States, but it's called Iroco. I think it's from like Africa. So it's a bit more sustainable as well, because they don't have to bring it like halfway around the planet like they do with teak.
Yeah. Yeah, especially still, if, yeah, most boats are being built in South Africa, right? So very close there.
Yeah, I think a lot of manufacturers now are starting to move to different types of woods for that reason. Or if they're not, they should yeah. do. I mean, it's quite silly, like, you know, chopping down trees on the other side of the planet and then bringing those little yeah. pieces of wood all the way around, especially if you've got them, like, within your... I mean, boats that are made in Europe and America, they've got no excuse. There's, like, so much wood around here. It's crazy.
Yeah.
So, listen, thanks very much for talking a bit about your story and, like, what's coming next. Really cool. Really appreciate it. And I think the listeners will really like it as well. And all the best. Got some good plans yeah. ahead.
Yeah, thank you so much. It was really a pleasure talking with you as well.
Yeah.